Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But, well, it looks like we don't have our guests for this hour, so we'll just ask if you want to give us a call. Why, we'll be glad to talk to you. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And if Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky comes, why we'll hold off on the calls. But right now, why, we'll be glad to talk to you, because I don't have anything planned for this hour. However, I might continue what we started last hour, and that is this supposition, and it is my belief, that the government knew who the hijackers were ahead of time. Now, why would I say that? You know, that's a terrible thing to say, and yet, you know, the 911 Commission report was simply a cover-up. Nobody was accused. Nobody was guilty. It was the process. It was the process was at fault, a terrible process. The process should be fired, or we'll get a new director of the intelligence. But George Tenet was already the director of intelligence. He was the supreme commander of all the intelligence agencies, and everybody knew that. And certainly the 911 Commission knew that, but they have to come up with some sort of an explanation of why things didn't work that morning. Well, on that Tuesday morning. And so let me just point out why I believe that they knew exactly ahead of time. And those of you listening the last hour, remember that we were talking about how on April of 2000, a Pakistani hijacker walks into the Newark office of the FBI. Now, this is all in the Eleanor Hill story, testimony on the 18th of September 2002 before the Joint Select Committee. Remember, there were two committees, the Joint Select Committee and then the 911 Commission. A lot more came out in the Joint Select Committee than came out in the 911 Commission, except for the 911 Commission staff report, which has some very, very revealing information. Obviously, somebody got that information and slipped it in, because you'll see a lot of that covered in my latest newsletter. But we do know that the Pakistani hijacker comes in. This is what, almost a year and maybe 5-6 months before the 911 attack, and he says, "I'm a Pakistani hijacker. I'm part of a hijacking team, and we're going to hijack a 747. We've been trained how to do this. We know how to use violence to take over the plane, and if necessary, we'll blow up the plane." So what does the FBI do? They give him a lie detector test. They find out he's telling the truth. He gets another lie detector test. He's telling the truth. So what a wonderful opportunity to have him infiltrate the hijackers and stop the whole plot. They report the fact that they've got this man with them there in Newark, New Jersey. He's desperate for money. He's been given $3,000. He's gambled it away. They give him a few thousand dollars. He'd certainly be willing to infiltrate this hijacking group, these Islamic terrorists who are going to hijack our planes. And what does Washington, D.C. do? Why, they say, get this man out of here, send him immediately back to Britain, even send your agents with him to make sure he leaves the country and gets back to Britain. Now, the logical thing would be, why didn't they use him and try to identify the hijackers? Why didn't they have them infiltrate the group? Why didn't they have him stay there so they could be advised of what's going on? And my supposition is, I believe they knew ahead of time exactly what was going on, but they don't dare let the American people tell that. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty, and we'll welcome your calls. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we were hoping to have a Mr. Vladimir Bukovsky with us, who is a Russian immigrant, has a wonderful story to tell. He was to call us from Great Britain, and, well, he hasn't called, so it's just going to be you and me talking here for the next hour. So we'll have open lines, and if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But right now we were talking about why I sincerely believe that the FBI knew who the hijackers were ahead of time, and I was simply talking about the story, and we have the documentation. Anybody wants this, or you can go to Eleanor Hill's testimony. That's Eleanor Hill's testimony before the Joint Select Committee on the 18th of September 2002. When she told about this Pakistani hijacker who walked into the Newark office of the FBI and said, I'm a Pakistani hijacker, and I'm part of a group that's going to hijack one of your 747s and, if necessary, blow the plane up. So, but the FBI didn't follow through on the story. They sent the man back to Pakistan, in fact, back to England. In fact, they wanted to be sure they got him out of the country rather than trying to get him to work with the group and find out what the plan was and where the plans were. So, obviously, either we have the stupidest people in the world in Washington, D.C., or they knew exactly what was going on, but they did not want the people at the local office to know, and they sure didn't want to keep the man here in the United States and have him infiltrate the hijacking team, because, of course, then they wouldn't be able to justify saying, gee, we had no idea what was going on. Well, there's so many other things in the staff report of the 911 commission. You can pull this down off the internet. It's 17 parts. It'll take you about 2 days to read it, but it's well worthwhile. First of all, we find that the government was able to tell the staff everything about Muhammad Atta. In fact, they even had pictures of Muhammad Atta taking money out of an IBM machine in Virginia Beach, Virginia, 7 months before the attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I'm just talking about what the government knew ahead of time about the hijackers. Now, the FBI then had given the staff committee of the 9/11 committee report a copy of a picture of Muhammad Atta drawing money out of an ATM machine in Virginia Beach, Virginia. It was, I think, in February of the year 2001. That would be 7 months before the 911 attack. And then, of course, 2 months later, they have another picture of him taking money out of an ATM machine. Now, I checked with our local bank manager, and she told me that, well, you always recycle those tapes, every 13 weeks. So neither one of those would have been in that field. She said the only time we keep our tapes and when we are ordered to. And so the question would be, who was it who ordered the bank managers back in Virginia to keep those tapes of Muhammad Atta drawing money out of the ATM machines? Somebody had to have the authority to give the order, but nobody ever asked that question. We know, for instance, that Zacharias Massoui, who's been on trial, has said he was watched from the moment he entered the United States. The FBI tracked him at every moment, and you probably heard the story of how Zacharias was up there in Minneapolis, and he was taking flight lessons, and the people up there at the flight school were immediately very, very suspicious of him. First of all, it didn't seem that he would be able to fly a plane. All he seemed to wanted to do was be able to fly the plane. He didn't worry so much about taking off and landing. At least that was the initial story that we had. And so the flight school people were suspicious of him, and they reported him to the FBI. And the local FBI reported it to Washington, D.C., and wanted permission to go through his computer. wanted a warrant to do it, and the FBI in Washington, D.C. refused to give them permission to go through his computer, despite the fact that the French intelligence told him he was a terrorist. They knew all about him. They'd been following him over in France. Isn't it interesting? They were following him in France. They knew he was a terrorist, but, oh, shucks, we didn't know he was a terrorist here. It's sort of like the story of Muhammad Atta, why we followed him all the time from January to June of the year 2000 when he was in Germany. The CIA followed him, but when he got to America, we just completely ignored him. And if you believe that, you
thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.